And this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Andrew Smith and Gina Bennett have a story on how the U.S. has extended deportation protections for migrants from 6 countries. Gina then reports on artists fighting back against AI. I have this week's education report on a popular TV show that explores education issues. Later, Ashley brings us the English lesson of the day. But first,
the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden recently announced it is extending temporary protection from deportation to migrants from 6 countries. Nationals of Sudan, Ukraine, El Salvador, Honduras, Nepal, and Nicaragua can remain in the United States under the extended policy. The Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, program permits migrants whose home countries are considered unsafe to live and work in the United States. They can do so under the program, although they do not have normal legal permission to be in the country. However, they can only be in the U.S. for a set period of time, and they must meet U.S. government requirements. Daniel Costa is Director of Immigration Law and Policy Research at the Economic Policy Institute, an organization based in Washington, D.C. Costa said current TPS holders have high employment rates and add billions of dollars to the U.S. economy every year. TPS raises wages through work authorization for people who don't have it. Higher wages also mean more spending back in the economy, which creates more jobs, he said.
The United States first gave Honduras, Nicaragua, and El Salvador temporary protected status more than 20 years ago. When the Biden administration extended TPS for those countries in June, it was for people who were current TPS holders. If the Biden administration again gives those countries temporary protected status, it would expand TPS for many people. It would permit any qualifying migrant who entered the U.S. during the last 20 years to receive TPS. A report by the Niskanen Center, a Washington-based policy research organization, said the vast majority of TPS holders are employed. More than 94% of TPS holders were in the labor force as of 2017, the report stated. It said that they worked in industries including sales and healthcare. The 2017 report warned that ending TPS for just El Salvador, Honduras, and Haiti would cause the U.S. economy to lose over $160 billion over 10 years.
Immigrant organizations have called for the U.S. to give new TPS designations. They hope the government will add Mauritania and the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, to the program. Niels Kinwani is the immigration coordinator for the Congolese community of Washington Metropolitan. He told VOA the group had conversations with U.S. Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, officials in April. We have also been working with congressional leaders to push for this designation, Kinwani said. The U.S. Department of State says the DRC is suffering a humanitarian crisis marked by over 20 years of civil war and conflict.
Leaders of Black Mauritanians say the U.S. had an earlier policy of not deporting Mauritanians because of the country's human rights record. Hadi Gassama is with the organization UndocuBlack Network. She wrote that the abuses include the practice of enslaving Black people and keeping a system of apartheid. Apartheid is a political system of racial separation. In January, Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown and Republican Representative Mike Carey sent a letter to Biden and other government officials to support TPS for Mauritanians living in the U.S. without legal permission. Congress established TPS in 1990. Currently, 16 countries are designated for the program.
Current TPS holders who want to extend their protection must register again during the 60-day registration period for their country's designation. Re-registration opens soon for four countries, starting with El Salvador on September 10th. TPS designations are set for 6, 12, or 18 months. About 2 months before a country's TPS ends, the DHS secretary has to decide if the U.S. will end or extend the TPS. The TPS program does not lead to permanent U.S. residency. As of March, about 610,000 foreign nationals held temporary protected status. TPS holders who leave the U.S. without first getting a travel authorization may lose their TPS status and may not re-enter the country. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Gina Bennett. Kernan's paintings are often striking images of female figures in bright colors of green, blue, pink, or purple. The 37-year-old artist from Nashville, Tennessee, calls her works surreal. She says they are dealing with discomfort in the human journey. Surviving as an artist is difficult enough. The pandemic made it worse. But now McKernan faces another threat, artificial intelligence, or AI. McKernan uses the pronoun they instead of his or her to call themselves. About a year ago, McKernan began seeing online images strangely similar to their own. They soon learned that companies were feeding artwork into AI systems to train software programs to create similar images. McKernan told the Associated Press, "I didn't give my consent for my name or work to be used this way." McKernan said they even tried to contact some of the companies to say, "Hey, little artist here, I know you're not thinking of me at all, but it would be really cool if you didn't use my work like this." But there was no answer. In January, McKernan and two other artists, Carla Ortiz and Sarah Anderson, started legal action against three image generator companies, Stability AI, Stable Diffusion, and Midjourney. They also named the online gallery DeviantArt in the case. The artists are seeking to protect their copyrighted works and their careers. They say the AI image generators violate the rights of millions of artists by using their artworks for training and then producing similar works that compete against the originals. The artists are seeking damages and a court order to stop AI companies from using their works without permission. McKernan said, "At the end of the day, someone's profiting from my work. I had rent due yesterday, and I'm $200 short, and it just doesn't feel right." Stability AI would not comment to the Associated Press, or AP, for the story. In a court document, the company said it uses simple words to create new and unique images. The company added the program creates new works and does not violate copyright. A Stability AI company official appeared before a U.S. Senate hearing in July. He said that artists are not paid for the images used to train AI software. Midjourney and DeviantArt did not return emailed requests for comment. Carla Ortiz works in the entertainment industry. Her work has been used in several well-known movies, including Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and Jurassic World. She feared that companies would think artists cost too much. Why, she asked, would companies employ artists if they can pay $30 a month for AI-generated works? McKernan agreed, "Will I even have work a year from now?" A federal judge in San Francisco will decide the case. Meanwhile, in a temporary win for human artists last month, another federal judge agreed with the decision by the U.S. Copyright Office not to issue copyright for AI-generated artwork. I'm Gina Bennett.
An American TV show called Abbott Elementary is a comedy about teachers in a Philadelphia elementary school. The show has been praised for being funny, smart, and heartwarming, and for dealing with important education issues. Over two seasons of 35 episodes, the show has explored education issues like school budgets, charter schools, and teacher mental health. The show is on ABC, one of the biggest American television networks. The show is being aired at a time of teacher shortages and debates about how race issues and history should be taught. The creator and star of the show is Quinta Brunson. Brunson's mother was a public school teacher in Philadelphia. Brunson plays a young second grade teacher named Janine at Abbott Elementary. The show follows several other teachers at Abbott, which is a badly supervised and majority black school that does not have enough money. Although the teachers often run into trouble with students and the administration, they care about their jobs and try to help their students. Brunson said in an interview with Education Week that two writers on the show are former teachers. She said she wanted all the writers to have a healthy relationship to education. She added that since the COVID-19 pandemic, education has been a subject on the minds of everyone. 3 years ago, no one was talking about teachers as much as they are now, Brunson said. And now, everywhere we look, we're talking about education. I hope that it leads us into a better place in this country with our treatment of education, specifically public education. Sarah Jones is a professor of elementary education at Illinois State University. Next spring, she will be teaching a class on Abbott Elementary. At each class, students will watch an episode of the show, then discuss an issue related to urban education that appeared in that episode. The class will also read related research papers from education experts. Jones is a former elementary school teacher and has researched urban education. She said the show covers many issues that come up in her research, like teacher shortages, teacher training, and unfair use of public money. I immediately fell in love with the characters and the storytelling, and that connection to my own teaching experience, Jones told VOA. The class is part of the university's honors program instead of the education school, so it will have students from different areas of study. Jones added that the show is funny and interesting, but deals with issues in a simple way that people who are not involved in education can understand. A repeated issue in the show's second season is the charter school movement. Charter schools receive public money, but operate outside the public school system. Charter schools also receive private money. Businessmen like Facebook co-founder Mark Zuckerberg and former Microsoft chief Bill Gates have invested money in some charter schools. In Abbott, a group called Legendary Charter Schools threatens to turn every public school in Philadelphia into a charter school. Charter schools do not have the same operating requirements as local government-operated public schools. Critics argue that charter schools receive local tax money that could go to traditional public schools. In one episode, the teachers discuss the threat of legendary charter schools. One of the older teachers, Barbara, says charters take our funding, not to mention the private money from wealthy donors with ulterior motives. But the principal, Ava, who is often portrayed as foolish, says, "Weird cash swirling around? Don't threaten me with a good time." Jones said the story explores urban school issues better than most shows on television, including the news media. I hope students will get from this class a deeper understanding of those issues, and perhaps a shift in perspective about particularly urban schools. Brunson said she hopes people who watch the show will be more likely to support schools and teachers. It's a public service, Brunson said of teaching. Who are we without teachers? Who are we without the people who teach us how to read? I'm Dan Novak.
Hi, Dan. Interesting story on Abbott Elementary. I really like that show.
Hi, Jill. Good to see you. It's a very unique show. You don't often see inner-city schools shown on TV and shown in an honest way. It's a really funny and heartwarming show, but also explores some important education topics at the same time.
You spoke to a college professor who will be using the show to teach about those topics, right?
Yeah, it sounds really fun. I would love to watch a TV show for a college class. But Sarah Jones, the professor, assured me the class would be much more than watching TV. It will be a discussion-based class, and there's a lot of things to discuss on the show, from charter schools to teacher well-being to dealing with parents and school administration. The class is not for students studying to be teachers, so a lot of the ideas in the show will be new to them.
Some of our listeners may not be familiar with charter schools. Can you explain again what those are?
Yeah, they are a bit controversial. Charter schools get public money but operate outside the public school system. So they don't have to answer to systems like the school board or teachers' unions. They operate more like private schools. Abbott's second season is a lot about charter schools.
Thanks for answering my questions, Dan. I'm really looking forward to the next season of Abbott Elementary.
Thanks for joining me, Joe.
Our next report, John Russell talks to us about a recent scientific study. The study explores the DNA of a famous mummy named Ötzi. Pay careful attention to the word insights. We will talk more about it after we hear the report.
Many years after the famous mummy Ötzi was discovered in the Italian Alps, scientists have studied his DNA again. Researchers found that the ancient hunter mostly had ancestors who were farmers in an area that is in present-day Turkey. Ötzi had less hair on his head and darker skin than scientists had first thought, says the study. The study appeared recently in the publication Cell Genomics. Ötzi, who lived more than 5,000 years ago, was frozen into ice after someone shot him with an arrow. In 1991, German visitors to the area found his body, along with some of his clothing and tools. Ötzi's belongings included a copper axe, a longbow, and a bearskin hat. The remains are housed at the South Tyrol Museum of Archaeology in Bolzano, Italy. Researchers published a study of Ötzi's genetic material, or genome, in 2012. However, the study of ancient DNA improved in the years that followed. So, scientists decided to investigate the mummy's genes again, said study writer Johannes Krauss of Germany's Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology. Researchers used DNA taken from Ötzi's hip bone. The new genome is providing deeper insights into the history of this mummy, said Andreas Keller of Germany's Saarland University. Keller worked on the earlier study, but was not involved with the latest. Based on the new genome, Ötzi's appearance when he died around age 45 was much like the mummy looks today. It is dark and does not have much hair on it, said study writer Albert Zink of the Institute for Mummy Studies at Yurok Research in Italy. Scientists previously thought the Iceman was lighter-skinned and hairier in life, but that his mummified body had changed over time. His genome also showed he had an increased chance of the diseases obesity and diabetes, the researchers reported. Ötzi's ancestry suggests that he lived among an isolated population in the Alps, Zink said. Most Europeans today have a mix of genes from three groups: farmers from Anatolia, hunter-gatherers from the west, and herders from the east. However, 92% of Ötzi's ancestry was from just the Anatolian farmers. I'm John Russell.
Before the report, we asked you to pay careful attention to the word insights. Do you remember when in the report you heard this word? You heard the word in a quote from a researcher named Andreas Keller. Let's listen again.
The new genome is providing deeper insights into the history of this mummy, said Andreas Keller of Germany's Saarland University.
Insight is a singular noun. Insights is the plural form. Insight means the ability to understand people and situations in a very clear way. It can also mean an understanding of the true nature of something. In our example, Andreas Keller is suggesting that the study of the new genome is giving researchers a better understanding of the history of the mummy. Let's talk a little about the history of the word insight. The Online Etymology Dictionary tells us that the word brings together two words, the preposition in and the noun sight. It originally meant something like sight with the mind or mental vision. Over time, it came to mean understanding people, situations, or the nature of things. We generally use insight in a few common settings. We often use the word when we talk about research, scientific studies, and so on. So you might hear a person say, "That study gave us great insight into," or "The research gave me a deeper insight into." Writers, thinkers, business leaders, and even older people in general are often credited with giving us insights. Or you might hear about a person who has an insight into an issue, debate, or problem. You might hear about a leader of great insight. Or you might hear a person say that a writer gave them new insights into an old problem. Insight is a somewhat formal word. You can use it in writing, official presentations, and also everyday speech. We will close with the following statement. We hope that this lesson has given you new insights into the English language.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.